Okay, just take a moment and look around you. Think about the air you're breathing right now, maybe the water you drank earlier, the food you ate.
Even the device you're listening on.
Exactly. They're all, in a way, these intricate gifts from nature. Pretty incredible stuff, isn't it?
It really is.
But here's the big question, the one we really need to grapple with. Are these gifts, these fundamental things, are they truly unlimited?
It's a huge question, and understanding the answer, well, it really underpins almost everything about how we live now and definitely our future.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. This deep dive, it's a focused recap of Chapter 11, Nature's Treasure. Our mission is to pull out the really critical insights from that chapter about Earth's resources.
The core nuggets of knowledge, you could say.
Yes. The core objective is to really shine a light on that crucial difference between renewable and non-renewable resources. And, show you why getting this distinction isn't just academic, it's fundamental if we want to figure out a sustainable way forward.
It really is key.
Think of this as your shortcut, maybe, to truly understanding something that's, well, quite literally the backbone of our society. So let's get into this treasure chest of knowledge.
It is a treasure chest.
Yeah.
And the real value, I think, isn't just listing what's inside, but understanding how it all connects its true worth.
Okay, so let's start broad. What exactly do we mean when we say nature's treasure?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, these are the natural resources, right? The foundation of human existence, sustaining all life.
Exactly. And what's really amazing is just how pervasive they are. They're the materials, the components we find in the environment that have value or are useful to living things. Especially to us humans.
Right.
And when we talk about them in an ecosystem context, well, an ecosystem is basically a community, isn't it? Living organisms, plants, animals, microbes, all interacting with their non-living surroundings.
Like the air, water, soil.
Or water, soil, sunlight. Yeah. It's this constant interaction, this delicate dance.
And within that dance, resources tend to fall into two main camps.
Yeah.
You've got the biotic ones, living things, or stuff derived from them, like forests, wildlife, fish.
Correct. And then you have the abiotic resources. These are the non-living, but just as crucial elements.
Yeah.
Water, air, sunlight, minerals, the land itself.
It's fascinating how we take those raw materials and transform them.
It is. That's where human-made resources come in. We take wood from a forest and, through our skill, it becomes furniture. Or we combine different minerals and elements to make an electric bulb or a bike.
It really shows how deeply we rely on those natural foundations.
But also our ability to reshape them, yeah.
Speaking of forests, you mentioned them. There's this really striking fact. A single mature tree, apparently, can absorb over 20 kilograms of CO2 a year and release enough oxygen for two people.
It's incredible, isn't it? When you think about it like that, forests are these super efficient living air filters, just amazing ecosystem resources.
And this understanding isn't new, is it? Ancient civilizations seem to get this interdependence.
Oh, absolutely. The Indus Valley civilization, for example, thrived because they understood and utilized the rivers, like the Indus, for farming, for fertile soil. And the ancient Egyptians, they called the Nile the gift of the Nile.
Recognizing their entire existence depended on it.
Exactly. It wasn't just convenient, it was literally survival.
That makes you think, how do we see these resources today? Are there common misunderstandings? I think a lot of people still just picture, digging stuff out of the ground.
That's a really common one, yeah. But natural resources are so much broader. It's the air, the water, whole ecosystems like oceans and rainforests. And another thing people often miss is that not all resources are like tangible products.
I'm right.
Many provide invaluable services, things like climate regulation, water purification naturally happening in wetlands, or bees pollinating our crops. These invisible services, absolutely essential.
Okay, so let's move to maybe the more hopeful side of this. Some of these treasures actually replenish themselves, right? The renewable ones.
Yes. And here's where it gets really interesting. Renewable resources are defined by that ability to regenerate naturally within a fairly short time frame, human-wise.
So if we manage them well.
If we manage them sustainably, yes, their supply can be effectively inexhaustible. We just can't use them up faster than they can naturally recover.
Let's take air, something we absolutely take for granted every second. It's everywhere. What makes it resilient, but also vulnerable?
Well, air isn't just one thing, it's a mix. Mostly nitrogen, about 78%, which is vital for plant growth, the whole nitrogen cycle. Then oxygen, 21%, indispensable for us for respiration.
And the last 1%.
That includes things like carbon dioxide, which plants need for photosynthesis, and water vapor, crucial for the water cycle, weather. So while the air itself is abundant, its quality is the vulnerable part. Human activity can easily compromise it.
Which is why clean air initiatives are so important.
Exactly. Planting trees, cutting emissions, pushing for renewable energy like wind power. You see places like India really leading in wind energy now, with huge farms in states like Tamil Nadu, Gujarat. It shows it's possible.
Okay, from air, let's talk water. Equally essential, obviously, for life, farming, industry.
Indispensable. But the crucial point here is, you know, Earth is the blue planet, 2/3 water, but most of that is salty ocean water.
Right, not directly usable for drinking or most farming.
Precisely. So fresh water in rivers, lakes, underground is actually a scarce resource. It needs careful conservation. It's not about the total amount of water, but the amount of usable fresh water.
And that's where things like rainwater harvesting come in. That seems like such a smart, practical solution.
It really is. You've got rooftop harvesting collecting rain in tanks for daily use, or runoff harvesting capturing surface water for maybe irrigation or recharging groundwater.
Simple but effective.
And historically, look at India's traditional step wells. Incredible pieces of engineering designed to collect rainwater, filter it naturally, keep it cool.
Yeah.
Truly sustainable designs from centuries ago.
Wow. Okay, then there's solar energy, probably one of the best known renewables. Clean, sustainable, seems almost limitless.
It is, in terms of the source. The sun's energy is effectively inexhaustible from our perspective. Solar panels use photovoltaic cells to turn sunlight directly into heat or light or electricity.
Powering homes, appliances.
Exactly. And the potential is just staggering. Get this. The sun delivers enough energy to Earth every hour to meet all of humanity's energy needs for an entire year.
Every hour? That's mind-blowing.
It is. The challenge really isn't the amount of energy. It's our technology and infrastructure for capturing, storing, and distributing it efficiently on a massive scale. That's where the innovation needs to happen.
Right. Okay, and finally, let's circle back to forests. We mentioned them earlier, but their role is so vital, isn't it? Habitats, food, shelter, oxygen.
Absolutely critical. They support immense biodiversity, wildlife, human communities. And think about cultural connections, too. India has Van Mahotsav, the festival of trees, every July, encouraging planting.
And that Chipko movement story is incredible.
Isn't it? Yeah. Early 70s, Uttarakhand, people literally hugging trees to stop logging, led by people like Sundar Lal Bahuguna. It shows this deep-seated understanding that forests are a living resource worth fighting for.
So these renewables sound amazing, but is it all straightforward? Are there nuances we should be aware of, misconceptions?
That's a really good point. It's not quite as simple as renewable equals perfect. One thing is availability. While the sun and wind are renewable sources, they aren't available everywhere all the time.
Right. Geography and seasons matter. Deserts get more sun, coasts more wind.
Exactly. And another nuance is that even renewable tech isn't totally impact-free. Large dams can affect river ecosystems. Wind farms can impact bird migration or just the landscape.
So it's cleaner, but still requires careful planning and management.
Precisely. Much lower impact than fossil fuels generally, but not zero impact. It needs thoughtful implementation.
Okay, so we've looked at the gifts that keep on giving, if we manage them right, but not all treasures are like that, are they? And that brings us to a pretty serious challenge, the resources that don't grow back.
And this is the crucial other side of the coin, non-renewable resources. The defining feature here is that they exist in fixed, limited amounts. They took millions of years to form geologically.
Millions of years.
Meaning once we use them up, they're gone on any human timescale. They simply can't be replenished quickly enough. They are fundamentally finite.
Like rocks and minerals, we use them constantly. Buildings, roads, tech, but they take forever to form.
Eons, yes. Rocks made of minerals form over thousands, often millions of years through intense geological forces. Think about granite for countertops, sandstone for building walls, marble for statues. They're essential for modern life, but their supply is fixed.
And the minerals themselves, they're the source for so many materials.
Absolutely foundational. We extract vital metals from them. Aluminum for planes and cars, gold and silver for jewelry, copper and cobalt. Absolutely critical for all our electronics.
And then the big one, fossil fuels. Coal, petroleum, natural gas, probably the non-renewables with the biggest impact?
Arguably, yes. They're these carbon-based substances formed from ancient decomposed plants and animals, squashed under huge pressure and heat for millions of years. Burning them releases a lot of energy.
Which we use for, well, almost everything.
Pretty much. Coal is still huge for generating electricity. Petroleum gets refined into petrol, diesel for transport, natural gas is used for cooking, heating, electricity. And you also get CNG, compressed natural gas, which is a bit cleaner for vehicles.
But, and this is the huge but,
yeah.
There's a major downside.
A critical, unavoidable downside. Burning fossil fuels releases smoke, pollutants, and massive amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. This directly causes air pollution, and it's the primary driver of global warming, raising Earth's temperature.
The consequences are enormous.
Far-reaching and potentially catastrophic.
And thinking about their history, coal used way back in ancient China. Oil wells there centuries ago.
Yeah, the use goes way back. Coal in China around 2000 BCE.
Hmm.
An early oil well also in China around 347 CE. But the modern petroleum era really kicked off much later with Edwin Drake's well in Pennsylvania in 1859.
And knowing that history, knowing they're finite and polluting, it suddenly makes perfect sense why something as simple as turning off a light helps conserve resources.
Exactly, because most of our electricity globally still comes from burning those limited fossil fuels, coal, natural gas. So saving electricity directly translates to conserving those ancient finite resources.
Resources that took millions of years to form.
Millions upon millions. That coal we burn today, it started forming from plants that lived long, long before humans ever walked the earth. The time scale is just immense.
So with non-renewables, are there common misunderstandings there too? Things people get wrong.
Definitely. One big one is this sort of vague idea that, oh, they'll last forever or we'll find more indefinitely. While some reserves might last centuries at current rates, they are finite. Continued use will lead to depletion eventually.
It's not an if, it's a when.
Exactly. And secondly, people sometimes lump all energy sources together as non-renewable. But that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
Solar, wind, hydro, they are renewable, constantly replenished. That distinction from fossil fuels is absolutely vital for making smart energy choices.
Okay, so we have this complex picture. Some resources replenish, some are finite. Given all that, what does it mean for us? What's our role? It feels like we need to be guardians, right?
That's exactly the takeaway. That's the critical so what. With growing populations, growing demands for energy, for materials, resource depletion is a serious, urgent concern. Using resources responsibly and sustainably isn't just nice to have, it's imperative for the planet's health and ours.
Which leads straight into sustainable development. The idea of meeting our needs now.
Without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That's the core principle.
So how do we actually do that? What are the key strategies?
Well, it involves several things. Identifying why resources are being depleted so we can manage them better. Preventing waste and just sheer overconsumption. Using things more efficiently.
Recycling.
Absolutely.
Right.
Recycling reusable materials is huge. Also, actively preventing pollution in the first place. Preserving critical ecosystems like forests and protecting wildlife. And, crucially, shifting towards alternative, renewable energy sources to lessen that dependence on finite ones.
And then there's that simple mantra everyone can use. The three R's.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. So simple, yet so powerful. It's a fundamental approach anyone, anywhere can adopt for conservation.
It really puts the power in our hands in a way.
It does. And it reminds me of that famous quote by Mahatma Gandhi. Earth provides enough to satisfy every man's need, but not for every man's greed.
Hmm. Powerful.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? How do we find that balance between our current needs, our desires, and the long-term health of the planet? Ultimately, it's about being more mindful in our consumption, recognizing how interconnected we are with nature.
And ensuring these treasures, these resources, are available for everyone now and in the future.
For all time, ideally.
Wow. Okay, so we've really covered a lot today. We journeyed through nature's treasure chest, looking at the replenishing gifts like sun and wind, and the finite riches like minerals and fossil fuels.
We really dug into that vital difference between renewable and non-renewable.
And hopefully we've underscored why understanding that difference is just so critical for our shared future.
And having this knowledge, it really empowers you, the listener, doesn't it? To be well-informed, to see that essential connection between our society and the natural world.
It's not just facts, it's a lens, a way of seeing.
Exactly, a new perspective on daily life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to leave you with something to think about, considering everything we've unpacked today about nature's treasures, maybe ask yourself, what's one small action, just one thing, you might do differently this week to be a more mindful guardian of our shared planet?
A great question to ponder.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and yeah, keep making a difference, however small it seems.